Hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Satsang with G. Welcome to Satsang. I see many new people joining today, and really a special welcome to the people who may be hanging out after Sri and Kira. I'm delighted you wanted to check it out. For those of you who may be new to the idea of satsang, it's an ancient practice that started in India, and it's simply a dialogue between a spiritual teacher and a student. And the best way it works is when there's as much interaction as possible. And to get really good interaction, there's a number you can call, 888-627-6008, and I can actually answer questions over the phone. That's through the radio station. Otherwise, if you're on Facebook or on YouTube, which we are broadcasting also on, you can just type your questions into the chat, which I already have one. So again, if you want to call up and talk to the radio station, it's 888-627-6008. And I remembered it right at the beginning this time, which is like really good, because normally I forget. So anyway, the show today is called You Are Not a Person. And I decided to do this subject because of I have a video on YouTube called You're Not a Person. And it is my most watched video of all. It's also got the most comments. It's also got the most thumbs up and the most thumbs down. A lot of the comments, it's kind of controversial. And so most of the comments are flattering. But there's a few that are really very pointed, and a couple that are even nasty, which is great. I love having the discussion. So, but when I talk about that, what I'm trying to refer to is most of us walk around with an image of ourselves in our minds, and we think that's actually who we are. It's a little like saying, you know, I'm gonna take my car down to the store, and you're just thinking about your car. You can't take a thought to the store. You have to take the car. And this is the way we act, though, because we've all been sort of constrained into this psychological version of ourselves. And, of course, that's the reason why we feel constricted, we feel constrained. It's the reason we start on a spiritual path at all. Or even if you start on the path of self-help and personal development, it's all motivated by the fact that the idea you have of yourself is too small to be comfortable. It just doesn't feel good. And, of course, it shouldn't. I use the example of the whale in the swimming pool. You take a critter that's used to traveling thousands of miles a year, the entire world of the ocean, which is the bulk of the surface of the planet, and you stick them in a swimming pool. They're not going to be happy. I don't care how much you feed them, how well you take care of them. They're simply not going to be happy. And the same is absolutely true of you. We were not meant to be constrained within the limited, narrow focus, the little prison we've created in our minds as to who we are. But we're really stuck there. We think that is actually who we are. And then we set on the spiritual path, or the path of self-development or self-help or self-improvement, or maybe, even more success, or learning and education. Every one of these paths is an attempt to try to improve this thing you've created, not realizing that the idea itself is wrong. And so no matter how much you improve yourself, there'll be a little bit of liberation, a little bit of freedom. We'll feel a little bit better about ourselves. And then it'll happen again. That feeling of constraint will happen again. This is inevitable. And the only solution I've ever seen, the only solution I've found, is the recognition that this person you're trying to improve isn't who you are. In fact, that person doesn't even exist outside of your own mind. And that sounds very radical and very revolutionary and, really out there. And for a lot of people, oh, that's that non-dual stuff, which it is. It is that non-dual stuff. But just realize that when you're very young, when you're a kidlin, there are a lot of limits on you. There are limits of your own body, a lot of stuff you didn't even, it took a while to even learn how to get your hand to your mouth so you could eat, you know, and later on you'll ride a bike, tie your shoes, all the things that, you know, because we're getting used to these bodies and how they work. But there's also all sorts of restrictions put on you as to what was allowed and what wasn't by the environment in which you were born. And so what you could do and what you couldn't do had nothing to do with who you are and what you were capable of. It had everything to do with what was acceptable to your tribe. And at first, the tribe is just starts out as just mom because you're in a body. Then it becomes mom and dad and siblings. And then it becomes the larger family and eventually the community and then the country and organizations and religion and school and all and peer groups. And it just gets bigger and bigger. But every single one of them has their rules as to who you're supposed to be and who you're not supposed to be. And the problem, none of us get through this unscathed. None of us have such a confidence in who we really are, a conviction of who we are, because you can't when you're that little. So over time, as the sense of self develops, which we also would call the ego, but it's not a bad thing. I don't use the ego in negative terms, usually. As that begins to develop, it's developing within an environment that's already totally constricted. So the self-image develops out of the constricted environment. As a matter of fact, the development of the self-image, the development of the ego, the thing that it does for the energy and for the nervous system and for you is to strike a balance, is to solidify a balance between you and the parts of you that are all suppressed, that you're not allowed to express, and the environment to the point where it's the perfect way to keep them suppressed. That's not who I am. I can't be like that. And this happens right out of the womb. It actually happens inside the womb as well. I mean, it responds to there's all sorts of evidence that these things are happening even before we're born. Even before the nervous system has developed, there is stuff happening that's making an anticipation of what's going to be in the environment. Somebody said the sound is a little bit low, so could be me. Hold on. So if it gets too loud for somebody else, I just pushed it up a little bit. If it gets too loud for somebody else, please let me know. I've got all these buttons and dials here. I'm trying to regulate so the sound is consistent on three platforms. Thank goodness I have a bit of a technology background. To me, as a spiritual teacher, the most important thing is to discover the truth. What was there before the conditioning took place? What is the real you that has been stuck in a corner somewhere that's only been able to come out in bits and pieces, or maybe not at all? You know, and of course, the environment in which you grew up isn't there anymore, right? So all of those restrictions, all of those things that were imposed on you are now being self-imposed. And the number one way they're self-imposed is through our sense of identity, who we think we are, the picture we're holding in our heads. That picture is what I refer to as the person. The sense of a separate self, the sense of a self that's kind of isolated and, you know, cut off and different than everybody else. And, you know, has its own world and its own problems and sees the world through its eyes. That's what I mean when I use the word the person. So you can be really clear about that, because most people think they are a person, this individual being that's functioning in the world. And the whole point of spiritual inquiry is to discover that that's not actually true. The person is 100% a construct of the mind imposed upon our genuine experience, the genuine reality of what's there. And as many of you have probably already discovered, that consciousness, the mind, is extremely powerful. So when it believes something thoroughly, it literally filters out any evidence that contradicts it, and it amplifies the evidence that confirms it. This is why they say in metaphysics and law of attraction circle, you create your reality. I disagree with that in the sense that reality is reality, right? I mean, it's, you don't create it. It's what is, right? We discover reality. But it certainly does create, color, and amplify our experience. So if I believe something strong enough, I'm literally going to see the evidence of it. Not because there isn't equal evidence for the opposite of it, but because I have really trained my whole mind and nervous system to focus its attention there. And the focus of attention is what creates our sense of experience, right? Because our attention is not infinite. It has boundaries. It can only see so much at a time. And the cognitive part of this, the cognitive mind, can't process that much information at the same time. It simply can't. It can't process a fraction of the amount of information that's actually being received by the nervous system. And so there has to be these very elaborate filters put into place in order to filter out what is not, quote unquote, important, what is not true, quote unquote. And that is what makes up the belief system. That's why when, you know, if you believe strongly in something and somebody comes along and presents a different view, you feel a little threatened, you know, even if it's, you know, kind of an open discussion. And of course, fundamentalism, that's what happens. You're in this position. Anything that contradicts it feels like a threat because the nervous system is actually interpreting it as if it is a threat. Okay, so now what does all this have to do with you are not a person? Just do a little exercise right now with me, if you would. And just imagine that we've just kind of walked into this really small room, and there's no room in this room. It's so small. There's no room in here for any one of the ideas you have about yourself. There's no room in here for the past. There's no room in here for the future. No memory, no anticipation, no associations, no language. Right? Completely in the present. Absolutely no references to anything except what's right here and right now. And just try to be aware of what is absolutely here, even though you don't have a name for it. Have no memories about it, maybe even can't identify it. And I mean here by in here, just within your own self. Now the flow of sensations is continuing. Of course, it never stops. The flow of thoughts continues, the flow of emotion. Those are all happening. Right? But don't associate with any of them. Don't get pulled into a story. Don't let the story cascade. Just stand back for a second. Just watch it happen. And notice that even when there's no memory, there's no name, there's no form, you're still here. You can't identify yourself, but you're still here. You're still present. You're still cognitive. Everything is still quite vivid, quite present, quite going on. Yet there's no story about it. It's pure experience. This is what Eckhart Tolle refers to when he talks about the now. Because right now, when you just experience now without any association with the past or the future, no anticipation of what this now means for the future, no idea of where it came from, the experience is pure. It's absolutely pure cognition. It is pure awareness. Sages and deep spiritual teachers would say, that is liberation. That's it. That is all there is to this mystical word, enlightenment. You are present without a story. And if you look really closely, you'll find everything you believe about yourself is the past. It's not here now. Every thought you have about yourself, the image you hold of yourself, it's a memory. And without that, there is you, but not as a person. And right there, with no memory and no anticipation, who are you? Notice it's just a pure experience of existing. It's just that I am. That's it. No, I am. Fill in the blank afterwards. I am male. I'm female. I'm old. I'm young. I'm from Palatine, Illinois. I'm from Nairobi. None of that's there. Just I am. Full stop. The simple, absolute, self-verifying sense of existence. That's what you are, and that's not a person. Call that pure consciousness. Call that pure awareness. Some circles it's called Christ consciousness. The great I am. The one being. Buddha nature. All of those are words pointing to that, which is simply what you are. Now, the wonder of this is that you can still go ahead with all the memories and call yourself what you do and do whatever you do during daily life. All of that can go on. It's actually necessary for it to all go on. You have to show up as someone. You don't show up at a party and go, no, my name is I am. I mean, don't do nonsense like that. But you're not tied to that story. That it's not like, oh, that's what I am, because it isn't. It's purely artificial. It is conditioning of the nervous system, nothing more. And the nervous system, as remarkable as an instrument it is nothing but an incredibly complex system that's whole job is to put itself into various forms in order to survive in the environment. It is a sophisticated computer, really. That's a good analogy for it. It's actually more sophisticated than a computer. It's an organic computer. It's kind of like, call it the sentient machine sometimes. And so its whole job is to condition. But what happens if you see it as the conditioning of the nervous system and you as a consciousness that's looking at it? And so that conditioning isn't you. The destiny of that conditioning isn't your destiny. The limits of that system are not your limits. Then what happens? If you don't believe that there are limits there, there aren't any. Your belief sustains it. And of course, you can verify for yourself that consciousness has no limits, because how many times have you changed over your life? How many have you expanded over your life? And it doesn't matter how much you expand or contract, consciousness is there to meet you. It's like space. It doesn't matter how big you get, there's always the space there to receive it. It never runs into a wall. So while our minds get focused on the particular set of circumstances, thinking that's all there is, it's not actually true. You're actually quite free from it. You're not a person. The person is the word I use to sum up, to summarize, to abstract the particular pattern of conditioning that happens to be your life. That pattern of conditioning is not who you are. It is the conditioning of the nervous system. It's such an amazing thing to see, because it simply liberates you from all the stuff that you thought you were stuck with. You're not. You're not stuck with any of it. It is, and anything that's conditioned can be conditioned differently. Somebody had one question here about, is it possible to rewrite the programming of the person? If so, how? The answer is absolutely yes, obviously, because the moment you don't believe you're the person anymore, it becomes flexible. If I am the person, I'm now fighting with myself. You see the difference? If I'm really identified with this person with all these limitations, then everything I do is going to be an attempt to overcome the limitations, but underneath that attempt to overcome them is the absolute conviction that I'm limited. So as long as that's there, there's the element of the feeling of limitation. There's simply no way to overcome it. You'll change it. You'll reframe it. You'll put it into a different form. But it will never, ever, ever go away because the underlying belief is still there. I'm the person. And by definition, the person is limited. Consciousness literally takes the infinite and tries to compress it into this limited form of what we call the person. Now, taking that one step further, the person is the sense of identity that has been projected on the conditioning. The conditioning isn't even a problem. The conditioning is seen as conditioning. You just see that's the way the body was changed. No big deal. I'll change it. I'll recondition it. I'll teach it to do something else. I'll unlearn that habit, and I'll make it to do this. Right? It's not a problem as long as you see it as pure conditioning. But when you, consciousness, identify it with it, say, this is who I am, right? At that point, the person is created. There's no person in the conditioning. I want you to all understand this. The person is not a thing. It is a thought. It is a thought projected upon the circumstances. The example I always love to use is the mirage in the desert. Seeing the oasis and the water and, people swimming and having a good time when you're in the middle, dying of thirst in the desert. Now, the desert's there. There's obviously a desert, right? And the sun, and it's hot, right? And there's this sand, and it's boiling, and there's not a cloud in the sky, and the heat is rising intensely off of the sand, and it's distorting the light as it passes through, so the image in the distance is all distorted. All of that is there, but the mirage is the oasis. The oasis isn't there. It is a projection on what is there. This is so important to get because everything is conditioning. You have to be conditioned. You don't survive unless you're conditioned, right? You have to know how to behave in certain circumstances. I mean, stopping at red lights is a conditioning, right? We're all trained to do that. And, and it makes sense, right? Not sticking forks into electrical outlets or biting on electrical cords, which I did when I was a kid. Those are good ideas, right? Those are conventions. Those are restrictions put on behavior for our safety. If they're seen as just that and you don't project an identity on it, then no person appears. This is really what I want to make clear. The person isn't a thing we're trying to fix. The person is a mistake in identity projected on the actual functioning of life. That's why I can say you're not a person. That's why I could make that video. It says there is no person. The person doesn't exist. The person is an idea that has been projected on the reality of the functioning of life. Just the way the oasis is a mirage projected on the reality of the experience of the desert. So if you start with the person and say, I want to fix the person or change that story, it's a tar baby. You're just going to get completely wrapped up in your shorts because you're not going to understand the real energy behind it that's created these repetitive patterns. And then you want to try to make some change, and then a repetitive pattern presents itself again, and then you start beating yourself up. I got to work harder. I got to visualize more. I got to take more classes. And all of that isn't true. You don't need to fix the person. You have to see through the person. Right? You don't need to fix the oasis. You don't head out to the desert with, your swimming suit, right? There's nothing there to fix. We're not going to try to make the oasis a better oasis. We're going to see that there isn't one and deal with the desert as it actually is. Deal with your life as it actually is, the conditioning that makes up the experience. But with the absence of the sense of being a person, you immediately just fall into presence. And presence is absolute and omnipotent. And of course, it's in that presence where you discover oneness. You discover your oneness with everything. Because without the person, you slip into presence, you find that your presence, my presence, the presence of everybody on this call is the same presence. And that there really is only one of us here. All right, I got some questions that are beginning to stack up here, so I better get to them. Let's see, from Indus River, beautiful name. Good topic today. My question is, do I, the apparent person, come from consciousness with the pre-agreement to experience to be this personal manifestation and to play with the five elements on Earth? Well, the short answer is no, because you're assuming that the person pre-existed your birth, and then it made this pre-agreement to show up. Remember, the person doesn't exist at all, so it couldn't exist before birth and had an agreement, right? What happens at birth is, okay, I'm gonna get into something. Some of you might, some of you believe this stuff, some don't, about past lives and everything. And I don't really teach, I don't do past life regressions, anything like that. But if you thought of your life, this life you're having right now, is simply an experience that's appearing in front of consciousness. Now, every night you go to sleep and you have a series of dreams. And in those dreams, even though from the waking state's point of view, you see them as being totally subjective, while they're happening, they feel very real, very objective. And in those, you are somebody. You're a person. You're doing things. You may have a different name. You may have a different gender. You know, you may have a different, you know, you may have both genders at the same time. You could fly, you can do all sorts of things in this dream. And your experience is one of absolutely being there. And yet, when you step out of that, you realize that it was totally subjective. It was a projection of the mind. And then we come into the waking state and we think, ah, well, this is real. But it too is just a projection of the mind. What happens at birth is that a dream begins. It's just a big, it's a dream with dreams within it. It's a dream within a dream within a dream. And at death, the dream ends. And then there's this blank period of different kinds of experiences. And then another dream begins. Until you realize that you are not the one in the dream. You are the ultimate dreamer. You're the one who's experiencing it. So you can't use the sense of being a person to solve any metaphysical problems or any spiritual problems, because the person exists only as long as you believe them to be. So remember, you're thinking the person is actually there. There's a thing, the person, that came into this life and is having these experiences. But look at your life. Look at the images you've had of yourself throughout your life. Are they all the same? They're changing constantly. As a matter of fact, every night you go into deep sleep and you forget the person altogether. And how many times have you had this great experience, you know, some moment of just, you know, of utter bliss or joy, and you forget you. The person isn't there, right? Because they're just a creation of the mind. They're projected and lost. They're there, they're gone. They're there, they're gone. Because it isn't a thing. Life is a thing, but the person is not. You are a real thing, for lack of a better word, thing. But the person is not. So the play of the five elements is being enjoyed not by the person, but by consciousness. When I say consciousness, I simply mean that which is conscious, right? That's that which is hearing my words. I use the example all the time because I'm speaking, and you know the pop filter and this microphone and this wire that's running into the mixing board and the mixing board and the thing that's connected together and going out onto the internet and coming in and going through your speakers. None of those things are hearing me. They're just there. They're just a conduit. Things are passing through. And I'd say the same on the other side. Your speakers aren't hearing me. Your ears aren't hearing me. The auditory nerves aren't hearing me. The eardrum isn't hearing me. The part of the brain that processes sound isn't hearing me. You are. Something is hearing. That something is pure consciousness. That's reality. That is what you actually are. But that consciousness projects itself on all sorts of things. And when it does, there seems to be a person emerging, but like in a dream. You know, you're not the person in the dream, right? You wake up and go, oh, wow. Sometimes it's like, boy, I'm glad I'm not. That was terrible. Or, no, let me go back to sleep. That was wonderful. I want to do that again. But nonetheless, it's not you. And the person in the dream doesn't wake up, you know? The guy on on TV doesn't change the channel. You, sitting and watching it, do. Oh, I try to drive this home over and over again because it's so critical. You are not a person. You are not your thoughts. You are not your feelings. You are the experiencer of them. And that which is experiencing them is not lost in them. Oh, I hope that answers your question. Let's see. I got the sound fixed. Very good. She's live streaming me in a chat room. Oh, right. Great. Great. So there's other people around there. Fantastic. GP, is it possible to rewrite the programming? I think I answered that. Not unless you're not the person. If you are the person, how does the person rewrite its own program? The program it's going to try to rewrite is going to be based on the program it thinks it is. This is really kind of the problem with self-help. The one you think you are is trying to design. I mean, the self we need to be liberated from is trying to design its own liberation. How's that going to work, right? The small sense of me is trying to imagine what it would be, you know, what the great, a perfect life would be like. It's just going to be based on the small sense of me. Like I use the example of the caterpillar, you know, envisioning its perfect life. It's just green everywhere and no predators, and he can just crawl to his heart's content, and all the leaves are close together so he doesn't have to worry about falling. The idea of realizing that its destiny is to be a butterfly is just inconceivable. You know, it doesn't have to worry about falling off leaves. He's got wings, flies, right? So if the new version of yourself you're trying to create is coming from that same place, how successful is it going to be? Let's see what else. I became aware of you a few weeks ago. I'm enjoying your plain talk about these talks. Oh, one is non-duality. Thank you. Great. Great, Jerome. Wonderful. Remington, I was at Ace Hardware back home. Oh, okay. Welcome home. I don't partner with me or something. I pretty much delayed it. I'm open to the. I'm not quite sure what the question is there, Remington. If there is pricing a self-made home, not quite sure what the question is. This one from Leanne. I understand that as consciousness, I can travel wherever I like and feel whole. When I come back to the sentient machine, the physical limits still exist. How do I be at one with both? That's a really great question. The first thing we have to do is it begins to realize that you begin to realize that you are consciousness, and that the sentient machine, the conditioning in the machine, is feeling extremely tight around us. Right? We have to recognize that consciousness is not the conditioning. It is separate from it. And that there's nothing that conditioning can do to ever really commandeer, take over, kill, or influence consciousness. It cannot harm consciousness. If we think of ourselves as a person who has been conditioned, a person who's having experience, a person is suffering, it will feel as if the conditioning is dictating your life, and it's going to feel very, very, very constricted, right? And just, so put that away. Put away the idea of who you think you are. Whoever you know yourself to be, put away the name. Every event that's happened in your past, every aspiration for the future, just put it all aside. Every desire you have, just put it aside for a second and just be. And you'll see that there's the flow of conditions, the flow of thought and feeling and all of that, that's there. But it doesn't run you. That's the big mistake people make. Okay, now I realize who I am. I need to change this conditioning because if I don't, I'm going to suffer. No, there's no suffering in the conditioning. The suffering is believing that I am my conditioning. That creates the person, and that's who suffers. Only the person suffers. The sentient machine doesn't suffer. consciousness doesn't suffer any more than space would suffer, even if a galaxy blew up. Space is unaffected by what is in it. So the only suffering belongs to the person. If you are not that person, there is no suffering. You can't suffer. So that's the line that has to be seen. I am not my conditioning, which means I don't even have to change the conditioning in order to be free of it. That's so important to grasp, because a lot of people, okay, so I got to change the conditioning and then I'll be free and then I won't be suffering anymore. You don't have to. It will change. But if you think you need to change it in order to get rid of the suffering, you're now at a war with that conditioning. That conditioning has been put in place as a defensive mechanism against the environment, and that is a war you will lose because it already knows how to defend itself against you perfectly. It must be embraced. The person is taken off. You see conditioning for what it is, simply the functioning of the nervous system with the intent to keep itself and you safe. That's it. At that point, you can begin to see, that's what it is. That's what it does. Now I can just let it do that. And when I let it do that, there's no more arguing with it. There's no more. Sometimes you can get intense, right? Because it was, you know, it got in a lot of the positions that it's in because, you know, things really did happen. You know, this isn't imaginary. We all had traumatic events. We all had really, many of us had horrible things happen to us, which set up these patterns in the energy system. When you disidentify with that, you don't deny it, but you open up the space to create a different environment instead of trying to get rid of it. It's a space that begins to embrace it, to recognize it for what it is. And that shift of perspective going from I'm trying to get rid of you to I love you for what you've done signals a very different message to the energy. It signals love instead of resistance. Acceptance instead of rejection. And there, everybody responds to love. Everybody responds to that sense of acceptance. That's what we all wanted. It was the fact we never got it as kids that created all our emotional problems as adults in the first place. So I hope that answers it for you, Leanne. Gosh, some of these questions, I prefer these things to go on for like hours at a time, but I'm under time constraint, so I need to get this to a lot of people. So you don't have to be one with the conditioning. You said, how can I be one with both? You don't have to be one with the conditioning. You are one. You are the consciousness. That consciousness is unthreatened by anything. So let that feeling just embrace whatever the nervous system is doing, however extreme it may feel. And you'll find out two things. Number one, it responds to love. And number two, you are beyond what can be hurt. Let's see. Oh, Indus River. That something is saying thanks. Yes. Yes. Then just know that's so beautiful. That something. I want to point that to you. That something is you. Whatever it is. And you know what? We don't know, right? I can't judge the experience. We could all be having a group hallucination right now. We could all be on an ayahuasca trip somewhere. You know, we could all be sitting in a hologram and have forgotten we're in there. You know, we could be. The actual nature of experience, what we are experiencing, is almost completely unknowable because of the capacity for projection and all that. But the fact that you are experiencing, that there is something that you are absolutely aware of, that is I am, that you need nobody's confirmation for, that needs no verification outside of itself, that it's undeniable. Whatever that is, and throw out any ideas you have, because we all say, well, that's the body and it's functioning and it's evolution or God put it there, whatever your expert, throw all of those out, because all of those are just ideas that you have. But what is absolutely undeniable is the self-awareness of existence. And if any truth is going to be known, it has to start with the one thing we know for sure. The absolutely one thing that needs nobody to confirm except myself. It is self self-evident, self-confirming, self-verifying, and self-luminous. I know that I am. I may have no idea what that is, but I have no doubt that I am. And that something is what's having all of the experiences. That's all, folks. Laughed out. LOL. Okay, that last part made it really clear. Thanks. You're very welcome. Remington, how do we... I love your name, by the way, Remington Damper. I mean, you really need to be like a spy novel author. How do we raise our consciousness to reflect the life we want if we are the experience? You're not the experience, you are the experiencer. And what I urge people to do, because, there's plenty of courses you can take. You know, there's all sorts of law of attraction things. And I've got a series of videos out I do about the law of attraction. Because there's all sorts of ways of, if you do change your beliefs, your experience is going to change. If you hold on to a particular idea or a particular visualization and you do it powerfully enough, your experience is going to change. But it doesn't tell you who you are. Right? It doesn't really answer the big question. Experience is constantly changing. Who is the experiencer? If you know that, then experience takes on a completely different character. Because I'll no longer seek a better life in a change of experience. I'll find that I am the better life I'm seeking, that I'm it. And from that self-knowledge, the amazing experience will arise. But as long as I am simply trying to change my experience, you'll see that there's an undertone there that says, my experience is not satisfactory the way it is. I want a different one. Right? And my question would be to that is, okay, who are you? You're so convinced that this isn't good and that one will be better. Who are you? Who is the one that's deciding that? You can describe your vision to a T. You can describe what you don't like about right now. Can you describe you? That's when it comes back to, I'm just the consciousness that's aware of both. And there's a motion, there's a movement in consciousness within me that's not satisfied with this. Okay, let's probe that. Is that what's not satisfied? My sense of being a person? Because if I've made myself finite, I'm not going to feel satisfied. And no matter what I do within that particular framework, it's never going to be satisfying because the real problem is I think I'm a limited person. So that's where I have to start first. Once I see that, now even desires and ambitions can arise. But they'll be arising from a different place. They won't be an attempt to compensate for something you feel is lacking. They'll be an expression of the deep inner knowledge that nothing is lacking and that you are everything you've ever possibly wanted. You become, instead of trying to get stuff, you have this infinite resource for forgiving. It's a completely different way of doing it, yet the power of manifestation is the same, right? Wherever the focus is, that's what gets manifested. But is it manifesting that which isn't really true, or is it manifesting what is true? Is it manifesting the person which will always be shifting and changing and never reliable? And, one minute it'll be happy, the next minute it'll be sad. One minute it gets everything it wants, and the next minute it goes, I don't really want this, and it's trying to give it away. That's the nature of it. As long as that person, which is constantly fluctuating because it isn't real, right, is the desires are arising from there, it'll never happen. But if it's arising from that sense of consciousness that already feels fulfilled, life becomes magnificent. It becomes an expression of your fulfillment. It becomes the gold out of which the statue is made. You can't make a gold statue out of mud. Right? And that feeling of lack is like mud trying to make a gold statue. Get to the feeling first. Get to that place where you see yourself when you really are. The rest will follow. Let's see, got another one over here from Deb. Loving it. Remember my question from last week, how to deal with verbally abusive behavior by friends or family, especially when you are sensitive. All right, first thing to do, drop the idea that you're sensitive. It's not true, right? That's a habit. It's a set of conditioning. It's a feeling within the system that when somebody attacks you in some way, that you want to shut down. So you've put the label on that of I'm sensitive, which is a way of buffering that. So take the label off and just go, I feel shut down. Somebody attacks me, I feel like I'm under attack. Duh, you are, okay? That's okay. That's how you're supposed to feel. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can easily see that probably when you're a child and you're attacked maybe by your parents or by a sibling or something, and you had no recourse, you couldn't actually stand up and say, oh, this isn't acceptable, I'm out of here, or engage in a conversation to, you know, kind of reconcile the difference if it's possible. You can do that now. You couldn't do it then. So the pattern got put into place that you would contract, and then the label came up, I am a sensitive person, which kind of solidified that and gave it stability, gave it a presence, right? So now it feels like it's a fact. Well, it's not a fact. It's not true. There's only the reaction within the system, and the idea that I'm sensitive to it is it perpetuates it because it's not true, right? So you are reacting perfectly normal to when people are being nasty, when they verbally abusive, and also, as you abandon that idea that I'm sensitive, you also abandon the position that somehow, unlike the child, you don't have to take it. You don't have to be there. You don't have to listen. You don't have to answer. You don't have to have anything to do with it whatsoever. You become powerful now because you're not in a story anymore. You're present. If it's somebody you care about, somebody you love, somebody that you know that the relationship is important to you, you open up a door and see if you can find a difference. But you draw that line. If it really is verbally abusive, you say, no, sorry, no, I, you cannot do that. And I've had to do that several times with people in my life. They stepped over the line. And I'm trying to remember, most all of them, you know, stabilized the relationship, was okay. You know, they were just, you know, their particular pattern, a way of dealing with people, they get aggressive, right? And if somebody backs off, they get more aggressive because they're getting what they want. But if somebody says, no, sorry, that's the end. Well, they'll either go somewhere else or they can abuse somebody else, or they'll back off if they value you, right? So this is, you know, to step outside of the person is to become powerful because you're no longer subject to the conditioning. You can see it. You can see the reaction within you. Sometimes it happens so fast it can overwhelm you. It feels like, you know, there's nothing you could do about it. But the longer you sit with it, the longer you're with it, that gap begins to open up. And so the trigger in the environment and the reaction become separated. And within that little gap there, wisdom can assert itself. And you can have an entirely different way of responding to it. And so you will no longer be a slave to it. You know, a lot of people say, how do I deal with them? You can't deal with them. They're their own robot. They're their own pattern of conditioning, and they've learned to work in the world in this way, and it's worked for them, right? When it doesn't work on you, only one of two things can happen. They will change it if they value you and want to continue having a relationship, or they'll go away because it doesn't work, and they'll just go somewhere else where it does work. But you are now rock steady. And you don't have to be concerned about it. So, I hope that answers the question. It's very, very powerful. Can you then speak about shadow work? This is from Rajni Bangri. What a beautiful name. Shadow work, I mean, it originated with Jung, right, a long time ago, which is really, it's really beautiful stuff. Jung was a little too analytical for my tastes, even though he was way less analytical than Freud. Matter of fact, Jung, when he visited India, was going to visit Ramana Maharshi, and he decided not to. He was afraid. He said he didn't want Ramana completely, you know, blowing away everything that he stood for. Very interesting. He said that himself. So anyway, the shadow work. When you are alienated from your feelings, that is, certain feelings are okay, certain feelings aren't okay, and the person is actually the vehicle the nervous system created in order to keep the negative things down and to amplify the positive. Right? And consciousness identifies with that now, voila, you have a person. Right? When they're suppressed, we would call them shadows because they seem to be working against us. In my world, there's no such thing as negative energy. It does not exist. There's only natural energy that has simply responded to the environment in the way it knows how, that is misunderstood. Now, if I take a position that this is the right way to be, and I've got an impulse inside of me that wants to be something else, that impulse is going to feel negative, even though it's not. It's natural. It's you. It may actually be even the best part of you, right? So that's what we would label then as a negative emotion. And some schools of thought, I've got to get rid of it. In other schools of thought, it's a shadow that I need to integrate. My position is those are ways of looking at it. But the only reason it's negative or a shadow is because I've taken a position that doesn't like it. The moment I say, oh, it's just a position I'm taking, there's some kind of action going on in the nervous system that needs to protect itself, that needs to function in some way. It may be a very positive energy, so let me open up and listen to it. That's the essence of inner reconciliation. I just say, I stop labeling it, and I say, there's a feeling going on here. There's a sense going on here. I listen to it. What does it have to say? I assume that if it's there, that life knows what it's doing. That it's there for a reason. And it isn't there just, you know, hanging out just to mess up my life. It isn't just, you know, little gargoyle sitting there just waiting for me to walk by so it can jump on me and say, gotcha, I'm going to wreck your life. It's not that, right? It's us. It's you. It's your own nature. But because of the way conditioning has worked, part of you has become unacceptable. When the unacceptable parts, which can't go away because they're you, begin to surface and voice themselves from the position that we've assumed, they look as if they are negative or shadows, but they're not. Not at all. They're just you. If you create a different environment, one in which is completely open to whatever you happen to be feeling, whatever you happen to be experiencing, there's no such thing as a negative emotion. There's no such thing as a shadow. And everything is allowed to come up. Get its right and natural expression, interact with all the rest of you, and have its life. And then you find that every one of these energies comes up, lives its life, and dissipates, goes away. Some are recurring, you know, depending on, you know, maybe there's a certain amount of creativity or clarity or things like that. Certain things kind of repeat themselves. But every single instance of a feeling coming up just comes up, does its thing, and leaves. If you don't resist it, it just comes up, does what it has to do, and goes. That's a harmoniously functioning system. So there's no such thing in reality as a negative emotion or a shadow or any of that. Those are all ways in which we've characterized things that we have disowned. When you see that, everything begins to become welcome. And I say begins because to begin to welcome what you weren't welcoming before takes some time and some practice. That's what I teach about in inner reconciliation. That's what the whole thing is about. And you can actually get a free course if you want to go to gpwelsh.com/IR. There's a whole 2-hour workshop for free called You're Not Broken. And it explains everything I'm talking about here in depth so that you can begin to reacquaint yourself with what in fact is nothing other than your own nature. That you have, because you have assumed yourself to be this person, right? This is allowable, this is not. So your nature has become unacceptable to you. To me, the essence of all suffering is a conflict with our own nature. But the conflict's artificial. It's not real. It isn't at war against us. You know, life is not at war with itself. And nothing life does, or you can call it God if you like, just simply does not make a mistake. So, okay, loving it, says Deb. Oh, remember my question. Okay, so we got to that. Any more over there? Over here. Okay, so here we have, how am I doing on time? Oh, wow. I think we're going to be closing in on the last one here. Okay, from List Minus V. Dear GP, how will we know that we will be at a place of having embraced the conditioning nervous system, if that makes sense? You'll feel peace. and happiness. You'll feel contentment. You won't feel conflict. It'll feel peaceful and still. It's very simple. Yeah, it's very easy, and it's very easy to get to because it's just love, and your nature is love. You're going to find this is way easier than even it sounds. I mean, me explaining it, it's actually more difficult than doing it. So I hope you'll take some of the classes. So anyway, and she follows up. Got a big heart from Indus. Thank you, Indus. And she follows up list minus V. So we must act as opposed to reacting. Difficult. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, but don't turn it into a decision. I've got to act now. Instead, let life flow. Right? When the system has begun to reconcile and the energies you had pushed away are now functioning, all of you, you're firing on all eight cylinders, right? Because the very energy that you have been pushing away is the energy you need to have the full life, to have a harmonious life, to have everything working. Right? So when that happens, you automatic when you show up anywhere without an agenda, but just really being present with an open energy system that has access to all of you, that the moment will call forth the particular combination of energies and characteristics and the like that the moment needs. So you're not reacting or really responding. You're just being. And the reactions and responses responding are happening, you know, without you having to do anything. I mean, it sounds like, oh, it can't be that easy. It is. It actually is, because when the conflict is gone or at least diminished, your inner resources, which you have felt alienated from, are all available to you. Which means that what happens when you show up in the moment is that it very naturally reacts. It's not decision. I'm not, oh, I'm going to handle this now. You don't even think about that. It just happens. It's like, you know, the musician playing jazz. They don't show up and, oh, God, I wonder what I'm going to play on that song. They just start playing, and it happens. Stuff, beautiful things happen. And all of the work and practice is to get so that happens. So they don't think about anything at that moment. It just is spontaneous. And then you get a group of them together and they're all doing it and magic happens, right? It's playing off of each other and just responding to the moment. I mean, this is it in, you know, looking at it from the point of view of music. Let's see. Ah, let life flow. Understood, I think. Thank you. Yes. I understand, I think. You don't have to understand it, really. Just try it out. Next time you're in any circumstance, it could be, you know, Remington in the hardware store or anything at all. Just instead of immediately going to the way you normally, just notice things are happening and there's a reaction going on inside. And that when that reaction happens inside, there's an energetic sense that wants to pop up and take a position. That is also part of the programming. And if you keep back and not immediately identify with that which wants to take a position, you find that all sorts of new energy begins to appear and the circumstance will literally change before your eyes. And what you've done on a very practical level at that point is you have removed the person, the imaginary person, from the circumstance. And you are now have shown up as complete, as pure presence. This is presence. The opposite of the person is presence. You are just there, fully as you, not as an idea of you, not as somebody that you're acting out, but as you, as the real you. And you don't even need to know what form that's going to take in the moment when you show up there. You don't have to, any more than the jazz musician has to know what notes he's going to play on this song. You know, there's the song, there's the outline of the song. I know I'm going to play this song. How I'm going to play it in that moment, I have no idea. So you know you're going to go to the grocery store, but how you go to the grocery store, let that be a complete and total mystery. Let that moment happen all by itself. Let it become the experience of a miracle. Let it be the the appearance of life right there, right now. Let it be the creation. Let it be the Big Bang right then. Let it be the, you know, the presence of God right then, right there. No expectations whatsoever. That's what it really means to live an awakened life. That's what it means to be awakened to the fact that I'm not the person, that I am consciousness, that I am nothing like, that I am not the person at all, that the person is just a constrained small version of me, that me, consciousness, infinite, unlimited consciousness, has mistakenly projected itself on, is inhabiting it as if it was true. So I want to thank you all for being here. As always, this has absolutely been a joy. Many thanks, everyone, for the intriguing questions and answers. I got to thanks. Everybody saying thank you. Thank you all for being here. This will be staying up on YouTube. It'll also be staying up on Facebook, and it'll be available on BBS Radio and on iTunes and a whole bunch of different places. So, thanks again. This is my favorite thing in the world to do. Thank you all. Love you. Namaste.